Thursday night, and it's so great to be coming on the air after a wonderful Blackhawks win. It's WGN Radio. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez. In the newsroom, we have David Jennings, and behind the glass is Ro, one of our producers that we've had the pleasure of meeting over the week. And hello. How's it going so far, by the way, Ro?
It's going pretty good. It's been a long day, so I'm happy to be here.
I don't know which. I know it's so. We can hear you, but I want to make sure we hear your voice louder. But you're happy to be. I love that. I'm happy to be here. There you go. Let's try. Yes, try that one. Let's see what happens.
I'm talking into the wrong mic.
That's okay. Right. So for those, let's go behind the glass. But for those who aren't familiar, there are two microphones in the producer's booth. One microphone that looks very much like the ones that we use here inside the studio with a long arm so it can swing around and be in different positions. And then you have another microphone used to talk to either the host or the co-host, and you know, let us know when there's a commercial and those kinds of things. You're not the only one that their producers have been here for a while that I have to go back and forth like, who, how do I talk to?
Thanks. Yeah,
you're not the only
I've
one
been making this mistake a couple times, so
no worries. All good. Where are you from originally, Ro?
Chicago.
Where'd you go to high school?
I went to high school in the suburbs, Tinley Park High School.
Oh, and so is this something you want to get into, is broadcasting, radio in particular?
Yes. It actually started off as TV broadcasting. I went to Illinois State University for broadcast journalism.
Great school.
Yes. Shout out to Laura. How you doing? but I when I came back, I did a little bit of traveling, went to St. Louis, worked in L.A. And ooh, when I got back, I went, entered into Illinois Media School, where I found my love for radio production.
Well, this is great. Then, what a great station to land at then. Congratulations.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
It's wonderful to have you. And so this is, I know you've been doing a lot of different shows. So,
yeah.
For those who aren't familiar with my show, maybe you just got in the car and just pushing the buttons and see where you end up. On Friday nights, I have a Freak Out Friday panel. And we don't talk about all the headlines of the week necessarily, in particular, any of the Trump tweets or breaking news in that direction. But we do it on Fridays. However, it's going to be a short show tomorrow, so I invited Dave Lundy and Eric Elk to join us for Scott Stantis' segment, the Cartoon Roundup. He is the political cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune. I thought this would be a good blend. So Scott joins us, and you can find all of his work on the Chicago Tribune's page. It's chicagotribune.com/Stantis, right? Your mic is on, isn't it? No?
No.
Oh,
now it is.
Because you moved over.
Oh, sorry.
I'm just teasing.
I know, I've never seen you from this perspective. I've never seen you this way before.
This is... Wait, am I in your chair, Scott?
I can be there. I can be there. It's all over. Yeah. I've never been here. So this is a whole new perspective on the world.
And the chair that Scott would sometimes be in is Dave Lundy. We have Dave Lundy, who is the president of Aileron Communications. For those who aren't able to go to, there's a very short list of people that can go to his Lundy Lunches, which he hosts every month. And always great conversation when he comes on our show and as well at your luncheon.
I love the invitations. I do, and I will come back eventually. But what's funny
promises,
is you always send out the, it's full. Don't even try to show up.
I know. Yeah. I know. I see the same thing, and I'm like, oh, you know, I was going to go. Dang it. And then I'll hit up Dave and go, man, that really sounded like it'd be fun. And he goes, well, you idiot, you should have told me. I can always make room.
Wow. That's great.
Well, to be fair,
in classic Dave style,
I can make room for certain people. And as, well, as
pretty,
a buddy,
I'm pretty special.
As a buddy of mine says, there's always another door. Although at this location, there is not. There's one door and one stairwell.
Right.
But for you guys, I'll make another door.
And it's George and Giorgetti. So if you try to crash this,
oh my gosh,
they're finding your body
doing?
Someplace in Indiana.
Good.
Doing?
Thanks, Scott.
I was going to say.
It's private, yeah, invitation
it's
only.
It's my fault now. See, this is
thanks,
you know what? Come back around.
It's the first Friday of every month, right?
Yes, that's first it. That's Friday exact. No, first month. Monday.
Oh,
first
yes.
Monday. First Monday. Only
by
for Scott Stantis, it's first Monday. For everybody else, it's a different time.
No, that was a secret. Okay. golly.
When you get there, what day it was.
That's what happens when I'm sitting in your chair. You're like,
exactly.
Taking it out on me.
One of them guys there will show you the right way.
My favorite thing is when I get there late, I'm at like the kids' table, like in the corner. And you get like, when they, because it's so hard for the servers to get to that side. They have like the people in the middle, like kind of like, oh, did you want some food? And it's like maybe a couple, you know, leaves of lettuce, and there's maybe a couple of ravioli, and I'm like, thank
yeah,
you.
That sounds about right. Well, look, I declare it sold out at 50.
Okay.
50 people. Really, the room can hold 60.
Right.
But we always get people who just don't RSVP.
Right.
They just walk in like elk.
Oh.
No, I mean, they just walk in.
Ooh.
And
But I've never done that though, because I respect it.
No, you haven't. So there's months where I've got, you know, prepays of like 40 people, and I'm like, well, I feel like it's going to be about 50, and then it's 40, and then other months I feel like it's going to be about 50, and it's 65, and we're like, why don't you people RSVP?
Hey, you took on the responsibilities of being an organizer. It's not easy.
I've been doing it a long time,
and I think it's wonderful.
How long?
And it's
I'm sorry.
It's all right. Go ahead.
I've been doing it. I've been doing it for. Oh gosh, I just realized I forgot to tell my mom I'm on tonight. Oh well.
Oh.
I've been doing it for 15 years.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, when we first started, it was me and the late Carlos Hernandez Gomez, who was the political reporter for WBZ, and Steve Edwards from also from WBZ, and we did it once, and I said, you know, we should do this thing. Let's do this thing, and then suddenly Carlos wound up at CLTV doing live shots every Friday at noon. So he was out, and then, you know, Edwards would show up from time to time. But in the early days, some months there were 8 people, some months there were 4 people, some months there were 10 people, and then over time it just grew and grew and grew, and then we took over the upstairs, and
here we are. Well, you do a great job with it.
Thank you.
It's a lot of fun. And Eric Elk rounding out our panel. He's the president and CEO of Fulcrum, Illinois, also former chief of staff for Senator Mark Kirk. And I wanted to start local because, of course, we do go by a lot of the cartoons that Scott shares with us in the paper every day. And I have to say, Scott, thank you so much for such a beautiful piece of art when it came to the police officers who lost their lives. This week. It really is beautiful.
Thank
I know that's not easy. I mean, you know, we think of cartoonists as trying to be sarcastic and just trying to, you know, be smug about things. And when you do things that are touching, it's incredible. And I think people should know about it.
Well, thank you. Yeah, that was a hard one. I mean, it was just, how do you say the same thing without repeating yourself? And that's, you know, we've lost 4 officers this year. And I mean, that's horrific. And I can't imagine those families. And so you try to think of that, and you try to think what they would like or what would they'd appreciate at least. And so that's the direction I took with that.
Let's take a break here, and we'll talk more about some of the cartoons that reflect the policies of the state and things that are going on. In particular, I want to talk about the Jane Byrne interchange that you also drew, and maybe state taxes. We'll talk about that in just a moment.
The Trump balloon.
Well, we'll go local, state, and then the Trump balloon. More Trump after balloon. This on 720 WGN. I'm a supergirl, and I'm here to see the earlier today, I was on the Kennedy outbound, probably around, I want to say 1:30 or so. I'd left after Scott Santis and I were on the Mincing Rascals. I was on my way home. There was traffic was kind of heavy on the Ohio feeder ramp towards the Kennedy. And all of a sudden, the light changed that says, you know, because it'll say express lanes closed. And as I was under the sign, it changed to open.
Oh,
and I have never.
That's awesome.
I have to go buy a lottery
ticket. It's like the
ticket.
Red Seas part.
It was amazing.
Yeah.
I was so happy.
You were the first one, and it was empty.
I was, because there were a couple cars that saw the gates open too, right?
Right.
Like they must have been like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Like they must have felt, like that first person has to feel like they have superpowers. Don't you think? Like you're in stop and go traffic, and then all of a sudden.
Why aren't these gates open? And they do, and you go, oh my God.
Right. How much faster did you drive?
Oh my, I was just pleased that there was air between me and the cars in front of me. It was fantastic. I just have never. Have you ever been like in a situation where I remember one time being in the Kennedy. I don't know. I think there was like maybe the president in town or something. So they closed on the Kennedy, and I was one of the first people on the Kennedy. And I was, you know, that movie Legend with Will Smith, because there was nobody on the roads. I was like, did something happen? Is everyone gone?
Was there an apocalypse? Yeah,
it was crazy.
No, but, I've had that happen to me. I also had that happen. It was like, oh, thank God. Yeah. Unfortunately, far more often, I've tried to drive home on a Friday night at 6 o'clock, and they've already closed the outbound express lanes. They do it all the time. Makes me crazy.
I always feel like, is anyone paying attention to the direction?
Exactly.
Yeah. Yes. Why do they do that? Who's in charge of that?
CDOT.
I should interview that person.
Or the,
yes.
How do you choose?
Is it IDOT or CDOT?
IDOT. Man, do you see how fast Eric's like, I know this one.
I've claimed or complained very, very, very loud on that.
Absolutely. And what have they said?
Drive it a different time.
Oh. Why do you think I love this shift? Why do you think I love this shift? When I was doing 7 o'clock, it took me 2 hours to get here sometimes. Now it takes me 18 minutes. It's incredible.
Oh, that's glorious.
Yeah. Oh, it's incredible.
Yeah.
Now, Scott, you had a cartoon earlier this week about the Jane Byrne interchange.
Yes,
I don't often have to take that. So that's where some people can kind of, I don't know. Well, it's a confusing area.
It's a butterfly shape of something happens in there. It's a vortex of which very few people escape.
Oh,
light or sound. I don't think either. And they've just announced recently that it's going to take another 4 years to do it.
I don't understand that.
It ties. Well, yes, you do. And so do I. And so does everyone listening. When I lived in Birmingham, Alabama, they're going to do a flyover to the mall. How hard can this be? It's a road. It goes, over, boom. It took them like 9 years and it still wasn't done. I swear to God, this story has a point. A tanker truck crashed underneath an overpass in downtown and melted it. So they had to rebuild it. They rebuilt it in 40 days.
Wow.
40 days, 9 years. You know this.
And your point is?
The point is there were people who were making a lot of money. There's a lot of people who are being employed for leaning on shovels.
Mm. See, I get that. But here's the thing. So I used to drive Congress every day on my way home. Every day on my way home. Way home, it's not that bad. It's messed up, but it's not totally messed up. But they close the inbound from the Kennedy onto the Congress, and it's closed literally for years.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was going to be 2 years, but now that they extended it out, I think my kids will be out of college by the time it's open.
Their kids will be out of college.
Exactly.
Maybe by the time it opens.
Eric?
It's insanity. And, what it'll end up being is, someone pointing to the fact that lack of funding, not a capital bill, which highlights, if there is a capital bill, what are the metrics that will be measured by with all the money that is spent on this?
That's the thing. And that's what people always want to know, that their money is being used wisely. And when you see that, it doesn't feel like it.
No.
At all. And speaking of the money and where does it go and where does it come from, us, you also had another cartoon about the state of California thought, well, why don't we tax texts?
Yes, the text tax.
The text tax.
So I have Springfield going, that's an outrage. Why didn't we think of that first?
Well, and this week there was a lot of rumbling from Springfield, and I haven't heard any Democrats defending this at all. Maybe they're not getting a lot of airtime, but the idea of adding 20 to 30 cents on gasoline in order to do the roads, which I'm guessing will
not. Well, that's different.
Is it?
No. In all fairness, the gas tax has not been raised in decades. The infrastructure, the amount of money available for infrastructure is shrinking, and our infrastructure is falling apart. So, and by the way, I'm not advocating for a gas tax increase, but we also have the additional problem that more people are driving high mileage vehicles, more people are driving electric cars, hybrid cars. So you're using less gas, far less gas, which means the amount of tax you were collecting is actually going down. The needs are going up, and we haven't adjusted for inflation. So something actually is going to need to give if we actually care about our roads and bridges.
Look, the amount of money, everybody gets so worked up about it, and I'm not a fan of new taxes or anything like that either. However, I do like to drive on roadways that are not going to cause me to end up having to spend thousands of dollars to repair my vehicle. And at the rate we're going right now, that's what we have. Our infrastructure in this country, as a country, is breaking down. And Illinois is far lagging behind in what it is collecting and what it charges in its gas tax versus Wisconsin, Indiana, Ohio, Michigan.
Have you driven on some of those roads in Michigan? I honestly God thought I had a flat tire for 200 miles.
It's amazing. And you think about it, every day folks are spending between, $3 to $10 at Starbucks. That amount of money, if you were collecting, not even half of that towards a gas tax weekly, that's all we're talking about.
Yeah. It's huge. It's necessary. We need to figure it out.
15 cents or something. I mean, it has to be done.
But let me ask you something. Isn't that what the tolls are there for?
No, that's the tollway.
Interesting question.
Toll roads.
As a matter of fact, our listener David has something to say. Hey, David, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good.
What'd you want to say?
I-90, the reason why there's taxes, tollways on it, is because it was supposed to pay for I-90, and tolls were supposed to be removed in 1990 because roads would have been paid for by then.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with the terms of the.
No, the tolls were supposed to expire.
Oh, yeah, yes, that I know.
That was more of a classic government bait and switch.
Folks also wanted roads updated, and so the only way to update those toll roads is to continue tolls.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a promise they never should have made. But there have been a lot of funky promises. So when nuclear power first came around, they said, "Oh, it's going to be so cheap. It's going to be too cheap to meter. You're never going to have to pay for your electricity." Well, that was also a bogus promise.
Yeah, and David, don't you think? I mean, as far as like the rapid expansion and the massive attempt to connect the states with the interstate highways, the 40s, 50s, and 60s, they didn't essentially know what that was going to look like, how long it would last, and how that funding would be sustained, don't you think?
That's a huge part of our whole economy.
There's more than just I-90. There's other highways that connect interstately that are not tolled because our taxes pay for it. So the taxes that we already have are supposed to be used for the upkeep of like Highway 251 or Highway 72.
Right.
And I-90 was tolls were supposed to pay for I-90.
Well, they were. Well, I appreciate your insight, and I hope that we figure out a way to keep paying for our roads. Thank you so much, David.
Does 20 and 30 cents though a gallon? Right. That's the proposal.
There is no proposal.
Rahm has a proposal.
Well, Rahm has a discussion. Rahm can't make a proposal because he's not in Springfield.
He's walking out the door, too, by the way.
Right. Yeah, and he also had a proposal on the pension plan, but I thought it was smart the way he went out and said 20 to 30 cents. You know, frankly, even if it was only 15 cents.
So now if you go 10 or 15, it's like, oh, it's less.
Yes, that might be smarter. By the way, from the 312, it took 1 year and 45 days to build the Empire State Building. There is no excuse for how long it takes to even pave roads in the Chicagoland area. More after this on 720 WG.
Here.
We bottle poppy. 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 Say you getting money. We ain't seen nothing. We bottle poppy. 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 We bottle poppy.
Oh man, it is Thursday night. We are live in the Allstate Showcase Studio. It is. We've moved our Freak Out Friday to Thursday night, and just for this week because of the holidays, the schedule's a little bit up and down, and we're only on for an hour tomorrow. So I have Dave Lundy, Eric Elk, Scott Stantis in studio, and when our good friend James Giuliano from Shout told me that there were some of our friends from Bistro. Now it's Campaign.
Campan.
See, I didn't even Campan. Now, is this in Evanston?
It's in Lincoln Square.
Oh, so this is a different restaurant.
Oh, okay.
So apparently there's a Bistro Campagne in Evanston.
Or maybe I'm...
It's Campagnolo. There's actually a...
Oh, right.
It's yes. Our stepsister. We're not technically...
Are they an evil stepsister or a good stepsister? Oh, wow.
I mean, if you want the long story, I could...
Oh, there's a little knob on there for the volume on the headphones. Now, you brought a couple of wines that we're going to enjoy a little bit later after the show, but I want to talk about the wines that you brought and the cheeses that you were pairing with them and the great holiday stuff you've got going on at the Bistro. So, Adam, who wants to go first?
Well, I want to introduce our new chef, Adam Grant, who we were very, very lucky enough to have picked up 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, 3 weeks ago. So.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you.
That's Todd, who is the restaurant manager.
Yes.
And how long have you been at Bistro?
10 years.
10 years.
Yeah.
So when you are searching for a chef, what was it about Adam that just leaped out and you said, this is the guy?
Well, that's tough. So we've been around for 16 years. We've only had 3 chefs during that entirety. So it's...
Wow. And because the turnover is usually pretty high, isn't it?
It is pretty high, but we've been very lucky. And it's kind of a long story. But with Adam, the tasting blew me away. Like, he did a bacon-wrapped trout that is now on the menu that was unbelievable with spinach stuffing and
a
caper butter.
Ugh. Yeah, so when you... are looking for a chef, you usually do a tasting.
Right, of
and
course.
Then,
I would think. Yeah. Not just a resume.
Right.
It's a little
resume
bit harder
is not
to go.
Gonna do much. So I did, for the tasting, I did this, like, vol-au-vent style dish, which is like a puff pastry with these mushrooms and this poached egg and all that. And that worked out really well, which is also on the menu. And then I think the standout of the tasting was this trout that's whole trout, deboned, stuffed with, like, a spinach mousse and then wrapped in bacon and then served with, like, a brown butter... lemon caper sauce, which works out very well, and I'm guessing that's probably what sold them.
Well, the vol-au-vent's on the menu too, so both of them, both the dishes sold us. But
So are these things that, I'm sorry, that you created, or were there, are there things that you already had on the menu you wanted to make sure he could replicate?
It's all Adam.
All Adam. Yeah. So you bring in a new chef and you have him kind of get in there and just roll up his sleeves and change it up to reflect both the restaurant and himself.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I would say 25% of the menu are the standards from our original chef, Michael, who sadly passed away in 2012. The rest of the menu, which was probably our largest menu rollout in the 16 years, and he did a fantastic job.
How'd that feel, Adam?
Rolling out a menu is usually pretty fun after it's rolled out.
Sure.
Leading up to it, it's pretty stressful. Lots of, getting things organized, and then especially, I've been there for 3 weeks.
Sure.
And then I put out a new menu on Friday. So getting everybody on board with that. Not just the kitchen staff, but then also you have the front of the house staff, the servers and stuff like that, that need to learn everything. It's fun now, but
sure. Well, yeah, I mean,
there were a few anxiety attacks in the meantime.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's a lot to get in there and sort of mix up you. And then you also have to, blend with the servers and the people in the front of the house. And then obviously your line chefs and the line cooks. Mm-hmm. It's been a while since I've been a server and the sous chefs and sort of, work with them. It's a dance. You know what? I can't carry that many plates. Even when I was 22, I remember there was a chef who just was so, because I couldn't, like, we would, have like four plates, mm-hmm. two on each side, and I don't have very strong wrists.
Well, our food runners are fantastic. They've all been there for 15, 16 years, too.
Well, you always got
to
take care.
You won't have to carry too many plates.
Yeah, take care of your food runners, for sure. And with, when it comes to front of house, how do you, let me ask you this, because we talked about how you've only had three chefs. Mm-hmm. What is the turnover like for servers? Because it sounds like you've got a family there.
We're super lucky. I don't know how I've been blessed with this, but I would say we have 32 people on staff, and maybe 16 have been there longer than me, and probably about 8 opened the place.
Wow.
So I'm super lucky. We rarely hire people, so.
That's got to be a good feeling when you walk into a situation like that. Right, Adam?
Yeah.
Oh, is it daunting a little bit? Cause...
Well, everybody's kind of like, since everybody's been there for so long, uh-huh. it's, everybody expects a certain way, and they have their own expectations and what it used to be, and then what we're kind of trying to steer towards what we want to do now.
Sure.
So it's a little daunting.
It sounds like you're handling it very well.
Yeah, the important thing is keeping one foot in the past and one step in the future.
We don't want
to do both.
Of course.
We don't want to stray too far, but we do just to grow.
Right.
We need to kind of start going a little bit.
Especially now that we're in the classic restaurant status, which... feels good.
But. And they're a local business. Now, Scott, I don't know how familiar... I think you and Jeannie, you travel the city. Jeannie travel the city by public transportation. So how, you get into the neighborhoods and the local restaurants.
Yeah.
So this is Lincoln Square.
Yes.
Which is such a great neighborhood. I do love the neighborhood restaurants. That's just what makes Chicago so wonderful, is that it's not all just down here.
They're usually the best ones.
Yeah. And you guys have been... Yeah, they are. And you've been there for 16 years?
The restaurant's been there for 16. I've been there for 10 of them. Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about that community and how much it's changed even in the 10 years you've been there, as far as the landscape with restaurants, bars, and entertainment.
I think 10 years ago it was starting to build, but within a 2-block radius of us, I could name you 10 great restaurants. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to build a restaurant community, and I've worked with the chamber and different community not-for-profits to sort of build the identity of the community, but we're just in that small area. We're building significantly. So I would say, we've got the Warbler that just opened up across from us, Gather. We've got next door to us Miku Sushi, Duelira, the Grafton, the Daily.
The Daily's been there
forever.
I used to live in the neighborhood, and I lived there almost 20 years ago.
Davis Theater just opened up.
It's
Arc.
Beautiful.
It's
that
awesome.
Helps. Yeah.
Fork. Luella's, which is the best Southern food in all of Chicago.
Oh, I've never been to Luella's. Fork is amazing too.
Yeah, you have to go to Luella's.
Have you had a chance to visit Lincoln Square? You guys?
I used to live in Lincoln Square.
Yeah. Oh, you
for
did.
10 years.
I didn't know that.
I did.
All right,
true.
Then maybe we were neighbors.
And there's a great apothecary store right there too.
Mertz.
Right?
Oh my God.
Funny
Mertz.
You should say that.
Mertz has been there
forever. Check your bags. That's from Mertz. Just so you
know. Oh, it's really.
Yeah. That's so funny. That's exactly,
Yeah, and actually I was just at Fork a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, I love the whole area. Just, it's wonderful. And where have you, have you chefed before, Chef?
So I've been cooking for about, 16, 17 years.
Uh-huh.
I started at Carlos Restaurant in the North Shore. Was classic 4-star fine dining, tasting menus, really, really high end. Was there for a good 7 years, and then just kind of bounced around, went literally across the street, helped open a place, and then been in Chicago for the last, 10, no, probably the last 7 years. Vincent Restaurant, and then Chop Shop, and so forth.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, been around for a while.
And how what got you involved in that? I mean, were you a server? Did you start out in restaurants? Or because becoming a manager is obviously something that's it's daunting.
Yeah,
for
I've got a weird convoluted story. I went to college for meteorology, so I'm a weatherman. That's my degree.
All right.
You know,
hey.
So if you ever want to know the weather, you need a guy to tell the weather, and I'll be happy to do it.
Good
but
to know.
Waited tables. Started waiting tables when I was 17, when my girlfriend at the time was making way more money than I was because I was shelving books at a library. And I'm like, I got to get into this, you know? So I paid my way through college, waiting tables, got into the music industry.
No, left turn.
Left turn, played in bands, you know, had some success at that, moved to Nashville. And in Nashville, you don't actually make money, so you need a gig. So
sure.
I bartended, and I had an opportunity to run my date spot, my favorite restaurant in the city of Nashville that just unfortunately just closed after 30 years. This place called the Mad Platter, but it's sort of opened up my world to wine and everything. And I was there for about 6 years, moved to Chicago. I was the GM at Bin 36 for a couple years.
Okay.
And then got lucky to meet Michael Altenberg, the late Michael Altenberg, in 2008.
Mm-hmm.
And, we sort of, you know, really dug each other, and I started running his restaurant. And, you know, I've been doing this since I was 16. I'm 41 now, so.
I love that guys can tell their age. You guys are so lucky.
Yeah.
I thought I had a non-linear career path.
Yeah.
That's quite a journey.
This is the one that I want to stay at, you know? It's I'll play music, I'll give you a weather forecast, but I want to run this restaurant for the rest of my life.
Do you give weather forecasts at the restaurant?
Right.
I do.
And do you pair weather with wine?
Much to the chagrin of people, because I love snow and bad weather.
Do you pair weather with wine? You know, is there a specific wine for sleet?
Yeah, I brought it, actually.
Okay, hold on. Let's talk about this when we come back. What goes with sleet?
Yeah.
What would you pair with sleet? You might have thought of a new segment for the show.
What goes with sleet?
Weather wine.
Well, sleet hurts a little bit, so you need a wine that's going to pair with the little bit of pain that you get from the sleep pills.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the wonderful holiday happenings at Bistro Campan. It's the second A that I'm struggling with. Campan.
So we're... we'll be offering multiple specials, which maybe you can give some attention to for New Year's Eve.
We'll take a quick break and find out about those, and I'm going to taste some of your cheese.
Oh, yeah.
Which it sounds, it's good stuff.
Oh, so good.
I know, so good. More in
fromage.
A moment. It's fromage. More in a moment. You're listening to WGN Radio. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, at 720 WGN. And Dave Lundy joins us. He's the president of Aileron Communications. And I didn't know that you lived in Lincoln Square. Maybe we talked about this and it just fell out of my head.
Yeah, my wife and I lived in Lincoln Square for 10 years. I lived in the city for 26 years. I grew up in the burbs and vowed to never return. And, well, life's what happens when you're busy making other plans.
That's right. And so you were there when the explosion of restaurants was happening as well.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it was fantastic.
Because I lived there in the 90s till 2001, and it was just starting because the Old Town School of Music took over the old library, and then the whole area started. I mean, the Starbucks came in, and there were some great restaurants that I started missing, but then Fork moved into a restaurant. It was Fiddle Faddle, and before that it was... What was it before Fiddle Faddle? I can't remember.
Oh, it was Fiddlehead, but I don't remember what it was before that.
Yeah. It was always great restaurants on that corner. Daily, just a great place.
Daily's been there forever.
They have a great patio, not as great as ours, but a great patio.
There's a place I went to, and it had a market with a rooftop, and we sat up there and had some awesome sausages and brats. It was European or German place.
The Brauhaus?
No, not that one.
Brauhaus is next
to it. That's closed, I think.
Jean's sausage.
Yeah. Jean's sausage.
And their rooftop is amazing.
That's wild.
3-4 months a year on the rooftop, you can drink beers, brats. It's
fantastic.
It's great. And then they're a true European market. It's like an old school deli. You don't get many of those in Chicago.
So. Well, and that's the thing about the area. There's a little bit of everything. And we're talking to our friends Todd and Adam from Bistro Campan.
Campan.
And I wanted to find out more about what's going on for the holidays. What are you guys enticing people with?
What are you doing
this season?
So we just rolled out our new menu, which we're going to keep with that. And then we're just going to run some specials. Probably do a nice seafood special and then do like a beef bourguignon. Something that fits with the weather and seasonal. Obviously, it's really nice out right now. It's 50 degrees.
This is crazy.
Probably, you know, Christmas, it might be a little bit cold. New Year's, hopefully, it's a little bit colder. And
maybe
then
we'll get a little sleet.
Yes, we're going to get some sleet. Sleet
to
yes.
match up some wine with.
Yes.
Well, you didn't tell us. What is the wine you match with sleet?
Well, actually, I brought it. The Domaine du Gros Nore, which is a Bandol. Don't want to get too geeky into it, but Bandol is in Provence. It's the only region in France that mandates that the majority of the wine is Mourvèdre. And what's cool about Mourvèdre is it's big, it's bloody, and I mean that in the best way. It's gamey, it tastes like meat and blood and dark fruit, and it pairs with those things, and it's...
Scott looks perplexed.
Scott had it. You had it.
Oh, it's spectacular.
It's awesome. And I mean those...
It's
like,
bold, it's...
In the wine geek world, we kind of use words that maybe aren't the most appealing.
Oh, the wine diva. I don't know if you knew Christine Bloomer, the wine diva, who was a regular on WGN,
Cochran's
show.
Mm-hmm.
She talked about how some will have like graphite. They'll call it like lead
totally.
Pencil.
Lead pencil. I love that.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
And actually, Mourvèdre, that same grape, when done in Spain and coastal areas, actually tastes like lead pencil. It's all about where it's grown and the soil types and all of that. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's the thing is that you don't have to be, you know, the thing about someone who's so passionate about wine is that for those of us who just enjoy it. I do read the labels and I'm like, if it says vanilla or toffee or chocolate or strong berry, like I'm all in. That's how you sell me.
Oh, no? You're all in on that.
I'm all in on that. Uh-huh. Yeah. Hints of. It doesn't taste like.
Hint of.
They
right.
never taste like toffee, but I always like those wines. Maybe Oopie. Psychologically.
But it reminds you of
those. It's like a little weird geek story.
Yes.
So vanilla typically comes from oak, right?
Yes.
And that's, you know, certain grapes work well with oak, certain grapes don't. But when you taste vanilla in a wine, you can also like it's sort of a brain, like, you know, those boards when you look at something and you're trying to like see something that you can't really see there, like the image things that I never was able to see those, but like,
oh
the,
yeah,
the descriptions
right.
and like what's the
right. So
the flavors,
if you taste an oaky wine, you can taste oak or you can taste dill.
Oh.
And you can't taste both at the same time, but your brain can kind of switch between one or the other, and they're perceived the same way, but your brain, it does a weird thing. But oftentimes I'll taste dill in a wine and then the next day taste vanilla, and it's a brain scam.
I wouldn't think you'd want to taste dill, but it makes sense because yeah, wine becomes like hints of vinegar a little bit.
Totally. Yeah. But oak does weird things to wine.
Apparently.
So,
that's
yeah.
wild.
Yeah.
And I want to know about the cheese that you brought in too, which is incredible. Tell us a little bit about this, Adam.
Yeah. So got a couple, we have four different cheeses. Three mm-hmm. of them are from France. One's from Croatia. Classic Boucheron goat cheese. And then more of a cave-style goat cheese with some ash on it. And then a double creme brie, which mm-hmm. is the super soft one. And then the Alpine-style cheese, which is a little bit harder from the Croatia. Works with the wine and everything. So seemed just to be... I don't want to say we matched them up. It just kind of... happened to go that way.
It turned out that
yeah.
way.
Yeah.
That's great. And I also read that you guys strive to have a low, like farm to table, sort of a low agricultural footprint.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's based, you know, that was our credo from the beginning. And, you know, that kind of goes back to our old story, you know, and sort of our genesis with Michael Altenberg, who's no longer here. He opened up Campagnola, which kind of comes full circle to our conversation. Years ago in 95, as a farm-to-table restaurant, when that just was not happening in Chicago. You know, he was one of the first, and his partner, Steve Schwartz, at the time, where they both worked at Let Us Entertain You. Michael was the executive chef of the Italian, like, division of Let Us Entertain You at the time.
Oh,
so,
wow.
And they both met together, and they opened up that restaurant. 7 years later, Michael was always an Italian chef, but he had a Francophile GM of Campagnola, and there was a tea house in Lincoln Square called Villa Cula.
Yes, I remember that.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's like all the wood lattice and everything.
It owned by Martha Cameron, who's now... Martha, I love you. She's
hi,
like
Martha.
She's like my surrogate mom. She still owns the building. And, you know, after 7 years, she was a Waldorf kindergarten teacher and ran a... a tea house and was an arborist. She's a tree surgeon too.
Like, well,
of course.
Why not? Right?
Yeah.
Right? So
isn't everybody?
She was
amongst
us.
I can't even get off the burn interchange.
She was a huge. She was a huge fan of Michael's food at Campagnola, and his son at the time was of kindergarten age and went to the Waldorf school. And she invited him to come to the restaurant. She's like, I don't want to do this anymore. Tell me if you want this.
Right.
And he brought his GM, who was, like I said, a huge Francophile. And Mark walked in with Michael and was like, and Steve, this is going to be a French bistro. And and it was like, boom, let's make this happen. Let's make a French bistro happen. And literally in like the history of restaurants, this has never happened. But she handed him a lease. And he opened up the restaurant exactly the same way that it was as the tea house, just spent $5,000 on a bar. And $5,000 later and 2 weeks later, he has a restaurant open with everything.
And voila.
Voila. It was magic. And, you know, we built a cottage in the, you know, that we've built on to the original restaurant, but it's pretty much looks exactly the same as it was when Martha built it. Now, Villa Coola is a reference to Pippi Longstocking.
Oh, I have no idea. Let's talk about a little bit more before you go about what's happening at Bistro Campagne when we come back on 720 WGN.
Sure.
Sorry, I had to run to this. We are hanging out with our friends from Bistro Campagne. It's in Lincoln Square. What is the address, by the way?
4518 North Lincoln.
45. Yep. And you had the rest of that story. 4518 North Lincoln.
Yes. Yes. Right.
And the website?
www.bistrocampagne.com. So BISTROCAMPAGNE. So it's champagne without the H. You don't know how many people call and they're like, this is Bistro Champagne, right?
Oh,
I hate having to correct that.
I actually sent it to my producer in the rundown, I think, with it spelled that way.
And the other thing we get all the time is, why don't you have that many champagnes on your menu when you're Bistro Champagne? I mean, I've got five really good sparkling wines and three are champagnes, but sorry.
You wanted to tell us a little bit more about the property and the changing of hands and the story.
Yeah, so Michael walked in with Martha and he's like, let's do this. And it was like the most immediate, quick trend. The restaurant business is complicated. This wasn't. And it was like, you know, an immediate success. Michael brought that farm-to-table concept over to the French Bistro, which was something also like kind of new in Chicago. And before I got there, that was, you know, I got there in 2008. This was 2002. Michael and Steve got a divorce.
Oh.
Michael got the Bistro. Steve got Campagnola. And
there you have it.
Oh. Yeah, there you go. So that's why Michael was a genius on so many levels, except financially, you know, but Steve was the financial genius. So I came on board a couple years later because I can, you know, I can work the numbers and stuff like that. And I had a very, very surreal experience interviewing with him. We were at the late Julius Meinl and he's like, just come in and meet with me. And I spent 3 hours of him just chatting and talking. I brought like a resume. I had this like leather bound wine book of like my resume. And it never got to the point of actually opening that up. It was just us
talking. Conversation.
And become like, we walked away best friends.
Aww.
And it was just one of those scenarios. Like my wife is texting me like, did you get the job? I'm like, I don't know. This is a really weird, I'm 3 hours into this interview. And so took over, you know, and fell in love immediately with the place. And I guess about 2.5 years in, on a Friday night, I got a tragic phone call from his son that he had passed away.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And it was really rough. It was a very complicated path going forward because he didn't have a will. There wasn't a clear path into how the restaurant was going to work. So I go in on Saturday. And mind you, I've been there at this point for 3 years, but everyone had been there since the beginning, like,
right.
You know, or had worked at Campagnola. Like they were, you know, Michael was the mentor, was the hero, was the mascot, was everything to us, you know, just a lovable man. And I brought everybody out and I sadly had to tell everyone that he passed away. Meanwhile, we had 157 people on the books that night. And we had a restaurant,
which
to
Michael
run.
Would have been thrilled with.
And I asked everybody, and it's an odd circumstance because what do you do? You know,
right.
What do you do in that situation? I think a lot of people would walk away from that, right? And I asked everybody. I said, "I'm putting this on you. We're a collective here. What do you all want to do?" And there were some tears for a couple minutes, and there was a collective, "Let's get to it. Let's go to work." And you know, we're now 6.5, 7 years later, and we do this in honor of our good friend and mentor, Michael Altenberg.
Well, I encourage everyone to enjoy the incredible destination that is Bistro Compound.
And we're actually incredibly lucky to bring Adam Grant, because I could tell you, as knowing Michael, he is somebody that Michael would have respected, appreciated, and is definitely follows in a very similar path and mentality. So
I look forward to other wonderful interviews with you, and we welcome you back anytime you have the opportunity. Thank you so much,
Adam
and Todd.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you so much. When we come back, we're going to go to the news in just a moment, and our conversation will continue. We'll do a little more freak. Now it is Friday. We actually can do the Freak Out Friday right now.
Because I've never had so much gain and threw it all away. And if I ever had the chance again, I'd probably do the same. Singing on.
Once again, we want to thank our friends from Bistro Campan. Find them in Lincoln Square. I thought we had lost Scott Stantis and Eric Elk to a plate of cheese, which is completely understandable.
I didn't get lost to cheese. I'll assure you of that. Cheese.
I
love cheese.
That's all good stuff. You know, are you guys eating more comfort food during this administration? Because I feel like I'm eating a lot of comfort food.
Janine has decided that we're going to be vegetarian.
Oh.
So, no.
Oh, okay. No. Yeah. Not even comforted.
Comfort is
no,
gone.
It's cauliflower rice and zucchini noodles.
Oh.
Because the comfort was described, that wine he talked about, the bloody and the meaty and the, you know.
Yes. That. Yeah, you can have bloody, meaty wine.
Can you do zucchini cheese, like macaroni and cheese?
Yeah, I don't. Oh, God.
When somebody says comfort food, I think of like macaroni and cheese.
Weird definition of comfort.
No, that's what I meant, is mac and cheese.
Yeah, mac and cheese is
hamburgers,
comfort.
Zucchini? Pizza.
Mashed potatoes.
You don't put zucchini in to make the mac and cheese comfort food. You put bacon in.
Ooh.
You put bacon or you
and
put
you leave
lobster
the zucchini. Yeah.
In the mac and cheese.
In the mac and cheese. Yeah.
Wait,
have you not
what?
Done this? Have you not had the lobster and mac and
cheese?
Dude,
you haven't lived. What do they teach you in Alabama?
Man, you're not living.
Yeah.
We'll have to find you a place.
Where can we? Yes, please. Thank you.
You guys keep talking. I'll just find a lobster and mac and cheese restaurant.
Really? That sounds spectacular.
I'll bet you there's across the street from, I was just near City Hall the other day near the Kindle Market, and I think there was a place, it was just a lobster restaurant, and I'll bet you they have lobster.
Well, they'd have to.
They would have to have mac and cheese. All right, I'll look into this.
And if they have the crumbs on top, and they've put it in the broiler and kind of a little crispy on the top,
mm-hmm. A little caramelization,
gnarly.
Mm-hmm.
Oh man,
so good!
I'm gonna find this for you in Chicago.
Oh man,
Scott, don't think less of me. I was once as you are now.
I'm kind of excited for you. I'm excited for you to have your first. So that's all.
Well, be gentle.
You don't know what you're missing. That's all we're saying. Let's see. At Shaw's Crab House, the Lobster, GT Fish and Oyster. These are some of the places that have lobster mac and cheese, by the way. And also the Capitol Grill. And these are all the restaurants in the area that have Luke's Lobster by City Hall.
All in walking
Luke's
distance
lobster.
For you.
Luke's Lobster.
Mm-hmm. On LaSalle.
I like lobster.
All right.
And I like mac and cheese.
Mm-hmm. Trying to find you some more places.
Them?
Mm-hmm.
I might just mind be blown.
And you could do that in your house, it sounds like. do you or your wife make mac and cheese? My wife's been experimenting with mac and cheese.
No.
See?
Oh, and you mix all the different types of cheeses?
Yeah, and the thing about mac and cheese, it's only really good when you caramelize the top.
Oh, yes.
It's so good.
I'm so fortunate that I get that.
I'm so glad I worked out tonight, because, jeez.
You mean you didn't want to have one of the peppermint Twinkies that I brought?
Oh, my God.
I do have to try that.
Yeah, I think that we have to try that during the break. Let's take a break, and we'll have some peppermint Twinkies.
No, we won't.
And then we'll talk about the possible shutdown, but I believe the House is trying to make some moves.
They
to
already
prevent
did
that.
Tonight, and they passed it, but the Senate's going to look at it. And
it's meaningless. It's not
I don't think it'll pass the Senate, but you know what?
You said that President Trump wouldn't win, and here we are. More after this on 720
WGN. Oh, I never say that.
You said he wasn't going to win.
I don't want anything else waxed.
This is like the reflex. This is like, well, but you said Trump was going to lose, so therefore you don't know what you're talking about in any regard.
I
hear this all the time.
I tease Scott.
Dave, you said Trump was going to lose. My son says this to me. Eli is like, Dad, you said Trump was going to lose.
See, I'm glad that Griffin doesn't
You didn't have anything waxed on the air.
He lost bets to me repeatedly.
Yeah, no, I didn't. That's, you know why?
You didn't know this, Eric? No.
No.
One thigh. Was it left thigh, right armpit?
Well, don't forget your listeners got to choose, and I got to veto the first choice because it was...
So that happened right before I started coming on this show on a regular basis.
That's right.
Because I remember like one of my first shows was the night we did, after you did the repetition of one of the words for...
Oh, I got a lot. Yeah. Is it that?
Yeah.
Is it that?
Yeah,
that's
no.
I held the record, but we had at a high cost.
Yeah, it was fun.
Eric's confused. I will. I'll let you know about that when we come back. Well, not the rest
before.
Of you, just the people in the studio and Rome. I'll tell her what word I used creatively for a half an hour. More in a moment on 720 WGN.
This is America. Don't catch you slipping now. Don't catch you slipping now. Look what I'm whipping now. This is America. Don't catch you slipping now. Look how I'm living now. Police be tripping now. Yeah, this is America. Guns in my area. I got the strap. I gotta carry 'em. Yeah.
This is America, and apparently we are on the verge of a government shutdown, which will be interesting. Some people have been pointing out that while President Trump vacations at his golf resort in Florida at Mar-a-Lago, his Secret Service agents will not be getting paid. That's gotta. You know what?
Wait, what?
Well, because they're federal workers. They have to keep working. They're considered essential. And yeah, there's a government shutdown. These folks don't receive paychecks until the government shutdown's over. Are you guys not familiar with this?
Yeah, no.
Oh, I'm extremely familiar.
We're all familiar. Shut down once.
Yeah, when it shut down. Well, I was there for...
Oh, you've probably been shut down a lot. Sorry, man. I couldn't help it.
Wow. That was
that was cruel.
That was so well
that cuts
placed.
Like a nuts,
thank
man.
You.
That's
thank you. I just like, boom, right in there.
I'm checking. Are you bleeding? Because you just got tagged.
Oh.
Dang.
So, as a. So
I'm having
a
day of that.
Yeah. So, I mean, in the 90s, when President Clinton and then Speaker Newt Gingrich, when they shut the government down, I was a staffer in the House, I was a staffer on the Senate side. When more recently, when President Obama was in and Republicans were in the House and the Senate. And the interesting thing is the staff didn't, we weren't going to get paid.
Right.
Members do.
Right. They decide on the shutdown and they continue to get, they continue to get paid. That's convenient.
But it's also part of the statute. So
that they
works.
Wrote, probably.
Well, staff.
Yeah. Good to say.
So, it is. It's a pretty bad deal, and that was something we were scrambling with in terms of how we were going to handle that, how we were going to staff offices, and where were we going to be able to make up the salary for folks later? Were we just going to give time off, or how do we do that?
Well, if I recall correctly, because my mother was a computer programmer for the federal government, so she worked on the Y2K, and she was considered an essential employee, and so other employees were sent home. She was essential; she had to stay, but the people who were sent home still got paid all the time while they were out of the office. So she was like, "Oh, okay, I see how this works." She was still showing up, and she got paid the same. From 301, as a government worker, I am so tired of being a pawn in these political games, and so many people must feel like that.
Totally. And the thing, you have issues, especially this time of year. I mean, not that it's any different other times, but holidays, people are traveling.
Yeah.
And when you have
air traffic control,
you have that, but also passports, the passport office.
Yeah.
So I can't tell you how many times in the course of a year or during my time in the federal government, friends, family, and just constituents from this state would call and say, holy cow, I'm scheduled to leave today, tomorrow, and my passport's expired. I lost it. Whatever. And so we would work with them to get it expedited, turn it around. Those offices
will be closed.
Correct.
Wow.
I got to ask Dave, because you're not as old as I am, because who is? But seriously, I do not remember. Maybe I wasn't paying attention as a kid or even as a teenager. I don't remember shutdowns, or as a young adult.
The first shutdown in our lives that I could remember was the Gingrich shutdown. And, okay. And part of that was because of the petulance of Newt Gingrich. And, you know, they basically dared Clinton to defy them, and Gingrich got himself into a world of hurt, and they wore and owned the shutdown, and it had such a long tail. People remembered the next election. What's so interesting is that now we're so in such a perpetual crisis.
Mm-hmm.
We've had three shutdowns in the last year. Nobody remembers them. It's like, eh. And Donald Trump last week said, oh, yeah, I'll own the shutdown. I'll bear all responsibility for the shutdown. And now Democrats are like, rock on, dude.
Yeah, but the shutdown's different now than it was in Clinton's time. And the Clinton-Gingrich thing, that shut down the federal government. That was a chunk.
It did. Yeah.
This seems like it's I'm not sure if it's legislative or what they've done, but it seems to be far less.
Well, they'll pick and choose.
We don't know. Yeah, yeah, they'll pick and choose. Yeah. I mean, I remember because I remember I think it was during the Gingrich shutdown. We were going to national parks and we got shut right. out of national parks.
Yep.
Yeah.
People don't think of that. Yeah. By the way, to catch people up, maybe they aren't tracking this or interested, and we're just having this conversation about it. Let's let people know that this is because President Trump wants funding for the wall, even though there was $1.6 billion allocated for enhancing border security. But he wants, $5 billion?
He wanted $5 billion. And look, this whole thing was so mishandled because it wasn't even a year ago that we were dealing with the DACA question, and the Democrats were willing to give Trump $25 billion in exchange for the DACA kids being allowed to stay. And it was a phenomenal deal for him, a terrible deal for Democrats, and Trump changed his mind. He said, no, we don't need that. And so then he kept trying to move the goalposts. And where we are now is it's $5 billion. But, hey, here's the thing. Last year they appropriated $1.3 billion for enhanced border security, and Trump didn't spend it.
Oh, there you go. Let me.
It's crazy. He's just so bad at his job.
It's nine federal agencies and about 450,000 government employees.
So Alex has some thoughts on this. Hey, Alex, what do you want to say?
So my question is, or my comment would be, the government, if they shut down, the employees still get paid anyway, so it really loses out on that, except for taxpayers.
Taxpayers.
We're paying for you to sit at home.
That's true, and they get paid eventually.
They get paid eventually.
So imagine, Alex, I mean, depending on how long this goes, how many employees, as Eric just pointed out, the number, live paycheck to paycheck. It's the holiday season. It's hard to plan for next.
Well, not just that. We, you know, as a conservative, as someone who kind of likes the idea of, you know, if when it shuts down, it would be helpful if it wouldn't restart, but okay. It does. But it's not cheap. In fact, it's extremely expensive to have a government shutdown. So it doesn't, it's not a conservative Republican thing to do. It doesn't make a lot of economic sense in that regard. So
yeah.
Anyone who points to this and says, well, yeah, he's going to shut it down, we're going to have the savings of however long it's shut down, not how it works, people.
Because just for one thing, all of the work that they're not doing has to be caught up on as well. So they're going to have to do it in
overtime, I believe. Yeah.
And they're all the employees are going to work and not get paid right away.
That and then they don't have the money to spend to pay their credit cards, their car bill, their mortgage, rent, etc.
But you make a good point, Alex, that they'll be getting paid anyway, but it is going to be a burden for many people.
And isn't Mexico supposed to pay for the
all right. Thanks, Alex. Have a great night. Be safe, okay?
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's take a break here. We're going to go to the news and come back and continue to... I think we're not freaking out. We're just going to this is...
Oh, no, I'm freaking out.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Today was a very bad day for America.
You don't freak out the same way I do. More in a moment on 720 WGN.
When you call my name, when you love me gently, call my name, when you love me gently, when you call my name,
we are live. live in the Allstate Showcase Studio. Joining me is Scott Stantis, the political cartoonist and member of the editorial board for the Chicago Tribune. You can find all of his work at chicagotribune.com/Stantis and follow him on Twitter at Scott Stantis.
Yep.
And he's also got Prickly City, both the cartoon and his podcast
the
here.
Prickly City Podcast.
Excellent. And Eric Elk, who is the president and CEO of Fulcrum, Illinois, and former chief of staff for Senator Mark Kirk. Dave Lundy, the president of Aileron Communications and the former half of what are you doing with your microphone?
What are you doing?
You're nuzzling with your microphone. I've never seen anyone do that before. I can't describe what just happened, but he was just rubbing his nose on the foam cover.
Just be grateful it's radio.
I have to do it just to see why. It's kind of soothing.
It kind of soothing. This thing is like a spit catcher.
Yeah, I wouldn't.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I really don't know where this has been. So.
Well, yeah, truly. That's why I have my own. So that's just.
Well, and for listeners who don't know, there's a soft covering over the microphones. It's like soft and it's fuzzy. And
you felt soothed by it.
I did.
All right.
I did. Well, you know, I'm freaking out over what happened today.
Well, Joe's going to help out because Joe's got some solutions. And we, of course, now have an echo. But that's okay, Joe. Hey, Joe, what do you want to say?
I trust we're not reverberating or echoing tonight.
I am, but not you. You tell us what you want to say.
I'll be darned. Okay. My quarrel was with Roger this evening, oddly enough. Roger, the comment you made about who's going to pay for the wall, Mexico, whatever, doesn't take too much gray matter to realize that the recent agreement with Canada and Mexico, if you will, and the NAFTA agreements are going to eventually equal the trade imbalance, okay? There are numerous ways to pay for the wall or put more money in our coffers, the United States coffers. So I'm tired of hearing, who's going to pay for the wall, Mexico, blah, blah, blah.
So, Joe, why ask for $5 billion in this budget?
It's minuscule compared to what we're spending, you know, the trillions, you know, overseas, whatever.
Right, the deficit and everything like that is growing.
It's just a political scenario. Do you want to stop drugs, cartels,
Did you know,
trading?
Joe? Did you know that most of the drugs that come into the country are actually through the border, not like actually at legal checkpoints?
Pardon me?
Most of the drugs that come into the country come through the legal checkpoints.
Yeah, the recent studies have shown that the
trucks, cars, so forth, and they fly in too. They're in bananas from Brazil.
So
I know that, you know. But the trafficking in human beings, the drugs, the criminal element, the disease element. There's so many things to be concerned. We build walls for Israel and various other countries across the globe, and we can't do this to save.
But here's the thing, Joe.
Sure.
Did you see President Trump's tweet earlier today? Because you're talking about the border as if it's very porous and bad. But Trump today said, with so much talk about the wall, people are losing sight of the great job being done on our southern border by Border Patrol, ICE, and our great military. Remember the caravans? Well, they didn't get through, and none are forming or on their way. Border is tight. Fake news silent. So the president is saying that the southern border is in great shape. So what's the urgency for the wall?
Gee whiz, it's such a, you know, irrefutable point. Walls work, if
Tell
you
him.
Will. Granted, you know, droids, surveillance of all kinds, if you will, work, if you will. Let me get to Roger's second point.
David.
I think this is more important. Okay. The dreamers. If my memory is correct, and I could be wrong, I've been wrong before, he offered them twice the amount of people a road potentially for citizenship, which was turned down by the Democrats.
No.
Okay, correct me if I'm wrong. Go ahead.
So he did increase the number, and he did offer double the number of people.
Correct.
But he then added several additional conditions.
Oh, chain migration and all that good stuff.
And there were several other conditions that were not part of the original deal, and the Democrats said, that's a bridge too far.
Okay, so there was chain migration and, you know, lottery and all that sort of good stuff. Is that what you're talking about?
Right, but chain migration, for the record, is how my ancestors got into this country, and frankly,
probably went through Ellis Island, didn't they?
They did, through chain migration.
Correct, but they went legally.
Yes, but through chain migration. Trump wants to get rid of chain migration. That's the whole point.
I think if you go through Ellis Island, do it legally, I think he would not be against chain migration.
That's what he's saying.
What's your comment on lottery?
Is Ellis Island still open?
No, but no.
No, not the physical location, but they do the same thing.
No, but Joe,
what's your thing about chain? I mean, the lottery.
No, no, but Joe, this chain migration point, it's a crazy, crazy myth, because the reality is Trump wants to get rid of legal immigration. He wants to. No. You have to pay attention to what Stephen Miller, his advisor, has said. He has proposed slashing the number of legal immigrants. Chain migration is about legal immigration, not illegal immigration.
Nobody's for illegal immigration.
Right.
That's a lottery. Let's jump to that, because I don't buy your first explanation about chain.
Look it up.
So I have to. I got to go, just because we're having this echo, and as cool as it kind of sounds dramatically. I'll listen in
to see what he has to say about lottery.
All right. Thank you, Joe. What do you think, guys, about lottery?
I don't like to play very often.
All right, then.
Yeah, it's hard. You tend to lose at the lottery.
Scott?
Yeah, I no.
All right, then. So there you have it. I also wanted to talk about, you have the letter that Mattis submitted to the president notifying him of his resignation. What kind of jumped out at you in the tone and content of that letter, Dave?
Well, so here's the thing. Normally when a secretary resigns, the letter is usually fairly flowery. It says, "Thank you, Mr. President, for allowing me the privilege to serve. It's been an honor to serve." Yeah, this letter didn't do that at all.
Didn't seem to.
No, this letter says, "I've been privileged to serve, but no thank you." He then goes on to make four key points about how much he believes in the importance of preserving our alliances, how it's imperative that we are resolute and unambiguous in our approach to those countries whose strategic interests are increasingly in tension with ours. And he specifically labels China and Russia, who want to shape the world in an authoritarian mode. And he talks about it's important to treat allies with respect and be clear-eyed. And then he says, and here's the money paragraph, he says, "Because you have a right to a Secretary of Defense whose views are better aligned with yours on these and other subjects, I believe it is right for me to step down from my position." In other words, dude, you are out of touch and I am out of here.
It's remarkable.
It was remarkable. It was absolutely remarkable. And as you know, Mattis is widely viewed as the last adult in the room who has any hope of putting a check on Trump. And when Mattis failed to prevent the president from his arbitrary and unilateral and fast pullout from Syria, he said, "Okay, I'm not effective here anymore. I've got to step outside and call these things out," right, which is what he's done in this letter. I have to say, you know, while people want to say, "Oh, well, I'm glad Mattis is standing up," and I am, this is really disconcerting as an American, because now Donald Trump is kind of on his own, and God knows what's coming next.
It is surreal. David Jennings is taking leave of us tonight, and it is always a pleasure to hear from our news folks. And we've got Vic Vaughn stepping in a little bit for Nick D. I know Joe kept calling him Roger. I'm not
he
sure.
He did.
Yeah. Or was he calling you Roger?
No, he was calling David Jennings Roger. Because Roger is normally here. So, yes. You know, when we're on Friday nights.
On Freak Out Friday. Oh, I see.
So that's why he assumed that, or maybe you were, David was Roger.
Maybe you were Roger.
I could be Roger.
You could be Roger.
I look like a Roger.
Yeah. I'm more of Roger's ethnicity than you are, though.
But I mean, look, we should be. This is very alarming.
Yes.
And eroding our position in the world on the global stage. With General Mattis leaving, and I think that the president has continued to weaken our leadership, and just undermine our credibility. So Putin will continue to grow in power, as will China, and the U.S. will take a back seat to a number of things now.
I couldn't agree more. And these are two, by the way, two conservatives talking here. Our foreign policy is a shambles. The kowtowing to Putin is an embarrassment, to say the least, if not downright treasonous.
Real quick, just to that point, I hope everyone noticed how quickly Putin came out and applauded the U.S.
Yes.
As soon as the president announced he was pulling out of Syria.
Right on the heels of the president saying that Russia hates the idea that we're leaving.
Right. And he did it, by the way, in a very familiar way. It was very diminutive. He said, "I agree with Donald."
Through Facebook?
No, in his press conference.
Right,
yes. Yeah, he tweeted it out. I agree with Donald. No, he said in his press conference, "I agree with Donald. This is the right move." And you're like, if Putin is saying this, it's not the right move.
Who in their right, I've got to say, as a person of a certain age, the idea that the president of the United States stands with this totalitarian Russian monster against the rest of the world is baffling. And it's just like, I grew up in a world where Russia was the enemy. Russia is still the enemy. And yet, this guy can suck up to Putin, and his followers are like,
that's how it works.
Yeah, just
well, but I don't want to single out Joe, but this notion that Mexico, because there's a trade agreement, that Mexico is somehow paying for the wall. No, they're not paying for the wall. They refuse to pay for the wall. And by the way, there's not going to be a trade surplus. It's a modest improvement on NAFTA. And we all say, yay, great, good job. NAFTA needed to be modernized. It didn't take into account things like digital and some of the digital intellectual property things. So we modernized NAFTA, and bravo for doing so. But guess what? You didn't have to like walk into the room and throw the table onto the floor and throw all the papers out in order to do that. It's just this government by temper tantrum that's really disconcerting.
Which is what Mattis alludes to in how we treat our allies.
Absolutely.
Whether it's Canada or France or England. I mean,
Or Germany. I mean, we treat this government, this president treats our allies like dirt.
Right. And I'm guessing Mattis's stance is like, how do I even operate if everything that I try to build with these folks is just going to be, you know, diminished by a tweet in a moment, and that spreads.
Yeah. Right. And so, yeah, you mentioned Canada. I mean, our closest allies fought side by side with us for centuries.
And still are.
Yeah. And still will. When need be.
Right. In places like Syria, in places like the Middle East, in places like Iraq, the Canadian troops are out there and they're putting themselves out, and the Australians are out there and the Germans are out there. And we just have been peeing all over these guys, and it's horrible.
Yeah.
And instead, we're sucking up to Putin. We're sucking up to Duterte. We're sucking up to every authoritarian on the planet. Seems like those are the people Donald Trump loves and respects, and the Democrats, he's not so much.
Is that because of more like, you know, the move against globalism and wanting to be isolationist, and he wants that he doesn't think of it. He doesn't realize that it's. He doesn't understand the ramifications of that.
If you're looking for themes. The theme of he likes dictators, he hates Democrats, and small D Democrats, not, you know, capital D Democrats, is the only thing that makes any sense. I mean, he's in awe, and he's even said this when Xi and President Xi in China became president for life.
Yes,
he expressed his admiration and said, "I wish I could, you know, I want
to
do
that here."
Yeah.
Let's take a break here and
see. I'm freaking out, Patty. It's Friday. I'm allowed.
It is Friday. Let's tell me something. Tell me something happy when we come back, and also what you thought of the peppermint Twinkies. 312-981-7200. Tell me what's making you happy tonight. More on 720 WGN in just a moment.
Hello world, hear the song that we're singing. Come on, get happy. A whole lot of loving is what we'll be bringing. We'll make you happy.
What's making you happy tonight? No matter what happens throughout the day, or even conversations where you may not agree with somebody, there's always something to be happy about and grateful for. And I want to first apologize to my texters who are sending in some thoughts on our conversation. And because we're moving into Make Me Happy, I don't want to ruin the mood. But some of you wrote some really great things, and I apologize. Of the 301 and the 630 and the 217. And I just want to let you know that I'm reading your post, but because Tracy's on hold, and he's been there for a few minutes because I want to take his call. Hey, Tracy, what's making you happy?
Patty, what's making me happy is that I want to thank you and everyone there for the, even though it's Freak Out Friday, thank you for the common sense and clarity that you bring to the show.
That's very kind of you, Tracy. We appreciate it. And it's always great to hear from you. Did you listen to that Mincing Rascals podcast that I did with Scott and John Williams and Eric Zorn and C. Bertrand?
No, I didn't notice it, no.
Yeah, that's on that link.
I have to check it out.
Yeah, please do, because you know, there's an extended conversation about a lot of these topics that I think also lends itself to you know, just voices of level-headedness, not trying to get too crazy about it. So... Thank you so much.
We need a lot of that, especially with the news of what happened today. We need a lot of voices of reason.
There you go.
We really do.
Thanks, Tracy. Thanks so much.
Hey, and happy holidays to you and everyone at WGN.
Thank you. Happy holidays, Tracy.
At WGN 720. Happy holidays.
Thank you so much. What did you want to say, Eric?
Well, I had something good.
What's your something good? Tell me something good.
So today is our niece's birthday, Sophia.
Aww, happy birthday, Sophia.
Ever turning 13.
Yay.
She was in our wedding, and
she was gorgeous.
Maid of honor, and so we are very excited. She's turning 13, now a teenager, so happy birthday, Sophia.
Yay.
Yay.
And by the way, your Christmas card is absolutely exquisite. Really beautiful. I'm sorry, I didn't get one. Yeah, I'm sorry about that.
Yeah,
never mind.
Yeah.
Sorry.
We just mailed them.
I live closer to
likely
you. I bet you I live closer to you. I live
still waiting for the wedding invitation.
Oh man. Ouch.
I really don't handle these situations
very well. That was something mean. Sad.
It came back around. I feel like you all kind of tagged each other today, so I think it worked out all right.
I don't know that it was tagging each other as much as
I'm pretty
Dave
unscathed,
and Scott
so
kind of like just kicked my butt.
I'll tell you what happened later.
Poor Eric.
Dave, tell me something good.
You know, my something good is so last Sunday I was at the Bears-Packers game.
Oh, how cool.
And it was 50 degrees and sunny on December 16th, the day after my birthday. And I'm watching the Bears beat the pants off the Packers for the NFC North Championship for the first one in a long time. And in the fourth quarter, Aaron Rodgers wound up getting sacked and wound up on his rear end, not in a mean way, but in a very clean sack. And the whole thing was just so spectacularly good. So I'm just feeling the good about the Bears.
I love it. Scott, tell me something good.
Well, I had a Twinkie.
Oh God! That's not even a color that occurs in nature, Scott.
No, that's a vice.
We did okay. Here's my something happy. I survived it.
Yeah. It's a peppermint.
It's only been like 10 minutes.
Okay, yeah. Give it time.
It is a red knot found in nature. And Patty, you tried a bite too.
I did. Sponge isn't even really peppermint. Sponge isn't even really
no.
That would be
didn't
kind.
Didn't you say it wants to be peppermint?
It wants to be peppermint.
Yes, right. it didn't get there.
It really does.
While it's been sitting there, I'm surprised it hasn't like walked off. I thought like. There's little legs.
It does look like it's taking a life of its own. My something good is to have the extreme pleasure to meet and work with Ro, who has been our producer tonight. A pleasure to meet you, and great job. I hope that you've been having fun. Do you want to tell us something good? It doesn't have to be the same thing back. You just tell us something good, Ro. What's going on?
Ooh, something good. I get to go home to a freshly cooked meal when I get home. So that's my something good.
That is good. See? She gets it.
Any mac and cheese?
Uh-oh.
Yes.
Is it cauliflower rice?
She's different. No crab.
You make mac and cheese different? It's good stuff. Tell me.
Old-fashioned baked mac and cheese. I come from a very southern family.
Nice.
So old-fashioned baked.
Oh, nice. What kind of south? We're in the south, Scott's asking.
Georgia. Greenville, Georgia.
Okay, Alabama. Take it down a notch. More after this on 720 WGN.